Hey Last Looks crew, Babalua Mitshusalwa, a makeup artist and leader in the South African film industry. Babalua shares her journey from a childhood passion for singing to an unexpected entry into the film industry, emphasizing the importance of pursuing one's passions and creating opportunities. Her commitment to providing opportunities to other aspiring makeup artists and advocating for inclusivity and diversity makes this episode a must listen for makeup artists and aspiring filmmakers who value representation and diversity. Babalua's story resonates with unwavering passion and resilience. Her unexpected transition from a receptionist to a trainee makeup artist unveils a narrative of seizing opportunities and embracing diverse talents. Her unique background and experiences provide a fresh perspective on the importance of representation and breaking stereotypes in film, making her a valuable voice in the conversation. Now, I did this a while ago, but I'm putting it out there to my Last Looks crew. I'm opening the podcast up again to guest hosts. We have already had one bonus episode released with our guest host, Gabby Opperman, chatting all about the hair and makeup artist trainee world, and we have more coming your way. But if you fancy yourself as a podcast host and think you have some awesome bonus episode topics up your sleeve, please pitch me your ideas. Just to be clear, this is for bonus episodes or mini-sodes only. Please do not pitch any idea that has already been done on the show, and please don't take it badly if I don't run with your pitch. It just may not be right for this particular show. If you have more than one idea, please feel free to pitch multiple. Email them to contact@last-looks.com. Write in the subject line, podcast pitch. I cannot wait to hear them. So reminders, two things are happening on Saturday, 6th of April. Number one, applications for the Mentoring with Last Looks close. So get those applications in now. Number two, our live Q&A with Tina Raisler-Kerwin. So be sure to get your tickets and submit your hard-hitting questions for Tina. Okay, let's get on with it. My name is Jamie Lee, a hairstylist working in film, and this is the Last Looks podcast, a show where I catch up with hair and makeup artists working in the film industry around the world. And today I'm chatting with makeup artist Babalua Mitshusalwa. On with the show.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
John Blake's Wigs and Facial Hair has been providing the highest quality wigs and facial hair to the film, television, and live theater industries for 15 years. Our human hair wigs are low density and hand-tied on Swiss lace to give the most realistic and natural appearance that is undetectable in HD and 4K content. This small, family-owned company has grown to fill a vital role to artists across the globe. We provide an unparalleled customer service experience that is rare in today's retail market. Our facial hair pieces come in 17 different styles and colors that are designed to precisely mimic natural growth and coloring patterns. They are made from blending human and yak hair in order to create the most realistic texture and appearance of men's facial hair growth. We are grateful to be celebrating 15 years of being an industry leader and a vital part of your artistry.
And now, our feature presentation.
Pictures up.
Last Looks. Rolling.
And action.
Welcome to the Last Looks podcast, Babalua.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Okay, so this is where our story begins. I want you to finish this sentence for me, okay?
Yes, seriously.
Once upon a time, there was a little girl named Babalua, and when she grew up, she wanted to be...
A singer?
Yes. And so at what age did you figure that out?
Around 7 years old, actually. I was a full choir. I've always really enjoyed singing since I was much younger than that. But I never really thought of it as a career. So I was thinking of career things. At the time, I was just very inspired by music. Coming from a very musical family as well. And then when I was in primary school, I joined the choir. And for the first time, I was actually singing publicly and learning how to do it. And I was just like, this is actually quite a thing. I think I want to do this one day. But I also had 1,000 other things that I wanted to do at that age. So, of course, that's the one thing that stuck.
Yeah. And who were you kind of looking at outside of your family that inspired you?
So there was a lady called Brenda Fassie. Mm-hmm. She was a big musician in South Africa at the time. And there was another band called Boom Shaka. They were also quite big. And then as I kind of got older, I started to hear a lot of jazz at home. Yeah, so that also kind of influenced it.
That's amazing. So you still sing now?
I actually started working on some music a couple of years ago. It's something that's always like kind of haunted me because I never really pursued it. And when I did try, it didn't really work out. So then I think I just got to a point where I was just like, I have to do something about this itch. And trying to do that while working in film is really difficult because it's so busy. I really don't have time if you don't play a project. So I worked on a series in Johannesburg and something just said, say something. So I told the director, hey, because he was very big in music and he spoke about how he wanted all the music to be recorded specifically for the show. So I was like, yeah, I'm a singer. I'd love to be a part of this. And then he was like, okay, cool. Let's hear what you've got. I wrote a little something, I pitched it, and it was like fantastic. And next thing I'm in a studio recording the song, and it was on the series. And from that point, I was like, okay, so I can kind of do this. I
love how you refer to it as a little something. I just wrote a little something.
Yeah, that's not exactly what it is.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, maybe I can do this. I can date within the world that I'm in.
Yeah.
And try to make that happen. And then I didn't do much of it for a long time until I worked on Noughts and Crosses. And then I did the exact same thing because the director and I had a really cool relationship. Mm. And he was like, cool, she can sing. And if you've got songs, sing. I was like, I don't really have anything right now. So he's like, okay, so create something and let me know. So I did the same thing. And boom, I have a song on Noughts and Crosses.
That's so amazing. I think it's brave to just have that, like, say it out loud to the director in the first place, to put yourself out there like that. That's very cool.
Yeah, it took a lot. Trust me, it took a lot.
But you've done it twice now, so you're getting the hang of it.
Yeah, actually. I think it really depends on the relationship with the director in the first place. I think, well, then I felt like I could say it too. I haven't really done it after that, but it did inspire me to just keep recording. Then I was like, okay, if I've got soundtracks on film and television, then maybe I should start recording a couple more songs so that when someone asks me, I can just present, you know? So I did that, and that turned into an EP that I'm planning on releasing at the end of the year. So it's happening now.
Wow, that's so cool. I always, I'm so stuck on this, just writing a little something. I'm a music lover, of course. When I'm listening, I'm just like, how do people even start coming up with this stuff? So yep. Just being able to do that step to me is just so fascinating. And then to be able to actually, of course, have the skill and talent to like follow through and sing is so amazing. When you're little and you're doing choir and singing and feeling like that's the direction, what happens for that not to become the direction and for you to head into actually working in the industry you work in now?
So another interesting story. I went on to study HR management and I graduated in that. And I was looking for some experience. And my then partner was in the film industry. And he was like, hey, there's a film happening. That film was Judge Dredd. It was 2009, actually.
Mm.
And he was like, they're looking for a receptionist. So I was like, oh, that's fantastic. That's exactly the kind of work I'm trying to get right now, because I need anything that's admin and office-based. So I took the job, and that's when I discovered the film industry. And then I was like, okay, what is happening here? This is much more exciting, and I think I want to stay, but not necessarily in production, which is where I started. The one department that fascinated me the most was the makeup department. Mm-hmm. All happened. Had to deliver some printouts that they needed, schedules and scripts. And I walked into the makeup truck, and I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. And I was like, this is amazing. So my next job, they called me again to be a receptionist. I said, okay, great. It was in Cape Town. And at the time I was in Johannesburg. So I told him, listen, I'm back in 2 days. I'm happy to do this. And I'm glad you called. They were like, okay, great. I got back to Cape Town 2 days later, rushed there. And they were like, sorry, we were really in a hurry to get someone, so we got somebody else. So I was like, oh. Turns out the same makeup artist that was on Judge Dredd was doing this film, which is Chronicle, Universal Studios. And so I had a chat with her, basically. And again, my then partner was like, hey, no, we have a good relationship with the makeup artist. I can like, hook you up. So I spoke to her and she was like, great, come through. Come play. I was like, okay, I'm not really trying to play. I'm trying to learn and get paid. And that's exactly what happened. It's not what I expected. So I came for the first day and she's like, oh, we're actually going to pay you for this day, by the way. I'm like, oh, fantastic. And then she was like, you were so great. I think you've got so much potential. Would you like to come back again for another day? We've got busy days next week. I said, yes. And then she was like, oh, you did so great today. I think you've got an eye, actually. Would you like to come on board as a trainee? And I was like, absolutely. And that's basically where it all started.
That's amazing. So those first days that you were going in and going into play, which is, I think, just a common thing that we tend to say. I think it's because we just work in some type of circus environment.
Yes.
Did you have any type of kit at all, or were you like just not necessarily doing makeup and just helping and assisting in other ways? Or explain that to me.
I thought I had a kit. I had like my little makeup kit because whenever my friends and I would go out, I used to like drawing. And I used to like drawing portraits and go through magazines. And then eventually I saw like, you know, just really beautiful women, it's beautiful makeup. So I started drawing the makeup as well. And then I started liking makeup. Then I started using makeup. And my friends would be like, oh, please do my makeup. But do their makeup and we talk about. So what I brought was a little bag, which is like, you know, like a tiny toiletry bag size with my makeup. And I thought I had a kit. I was like, okay, I've got a couple of things. Did I bring your stuff? I was like, okay. I rock up. And these girls have suitcases and they have these gigantic makeup kits. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have 5 brushes and I don't even know how to use them for this situation. So no, I barely had anything. And I was super intimidated when I saw everybody else bringing out their kits.
So how did you go about kind of building on that? I mean, I assume the person who hired you kind of figured out that, I mean, they must have known from the beginning that this was your first experience. So yeah. I assume they kind of guided you and helped you and let you borrow things and it worked in that way.
Yeah. So they gave me a concealer palette and I had do you have brushes? I was like, yeah, I do. It was the tiniest like art brush. And they gave me this teenager because it was a big party. It was like a teenage party at a school.
Mm.
And she had like a lot of acne, pimples, like typical teenage, like bad acne skin.
Mm.
And I could just match the color and just cover up everything. I had the tiniest brush. It took me an entire hour just to cover the spots because I didn't know what I was doing. But I figured out the colors and I matched, you know, so that was good.
Mm.
But yeah, literally took me an hour. Everyone was calling next because we were doing all the background actors. But next. Next, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm still busy with the same person. By the time we were done, I had literally done one face and a lipstick.
I'm sure you're a bit faster now.
Oh, yeah. A lot has changed.
I mean, that's a pretty great first job story. I think that's really coming from knowing very little to, I am guessing you learned a lot on that job.
I did. I really did. Really learned a lot. I learned more through watching people than doing anything. But yeah, it gave me a good insight on what this is about more than how to do this, you know?
Yeah. And when you were doing stuff in the production office, had you been to set before? I know you mentioned that you'd been to the makeup truck, but had you been to set before?
No, I had not been to set before this job. Even walking to the makeup truck, I didn't even know. I knew absolutely nothing. I didn't know anything about this world. I just knew that I watch movies and, oh, this is how they're made.
Mm. So do you remember your first day on set, like your first time actually going on set to see how it works?
Yes, it was the exact same day. I was very overwhelmed. It was also like, it was a party in like a barn house type of building. And it was in a forest. It was a very hectic rainy night. It was a long night. It was a night shoot. And I was just like, how do these people do this? There's so much happening. I don't understand what most people are doing. I can see what they're doing. Okay, that guy is recording sound. Oh, there's a mic. Okay, there's a camera. But I barely understood the concept of it, really, and just how everything works and what everything means. So it was new. And I'd stepped on, I'd stepped onto set when I was a receptionist.
Okay.
Once or twice. I didn't really have much time to go to set. And it was an incredible set. So it was a massive construction in a studio. I just remember everything being big.
Wow. So that first experience is a lot. You get thrown in, you're getting background ready, you're going to set. It's a night shoot. There's horrible weather happening. It's a lot.
Yeah.
And you still came back. So that's good.
Oh, yeah, I had fun. I thought it was really cool. I definitely enjoyed it more than being a receptionist. It was a really exciting world that I really wanted to know much more about.
Yeah.
For sure.
And do you find your training that you did through school has helped you now in the line of work that you're in, the position that you're in?
You mean in HR?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Mm.
I mean, at first it was a shock because there was, in South Africa, there's not really an HR department in productions. So one of the first questions I asked was, the HR department? But that didn't exist. And I was like, what do you mean?
Mm.
But as I've grown and become like a designer and have coming to lead and run a team, I found that there's a lot about HR that actually helps me. And a lot of things that when I was training and being an assistant, I really missed and felt that there was a need for.
Mm.
In terms of like leadership skills, which I apply now every day. So we did a lot of like training and development. So that helped a lot because I train a lot of trainees. Personnel management, just managing people, psychology side of it, figuring out how to like, you know, run an organization. That's how I treat my department. I treat it as an organization. We've got different parts. Everybody has different roles. Yeah. And everybody's at different levels. So you kind of treat everybody slightly differently depending on their level of skill and their comfortability with different things that are happening depending on what the job needs. So definitely, I apply it every day.
Yeah, I would have to say that we probably have a lot of people that'll be listening to this episode who are a little envious of that. I have so many people in so many discussions about how we are trained to be artists and we come into this industry and then you find yourself at some point running a department or running the crowd room and background and just learning as you go to try and figure out how to manage people and how to, you know, just lead the best way that you can for your team. And it's really, most of us are just learning as we go and trying to figure it out. And of course, we're working with a lot of creative people as well. So there's, you know, and they're very passionate about their work. So sometimes it's a very sensitive topic or situation or just, you know, when you're talking about their work or giving them instruction and all that type of stuff. So, I mean, amazing that you have that background. That is, priceless. That's amazing.
Extremely helpful. It definitely is very helpful. Because you're also dealing with people that don't come from the same background or even a similar background. It's people coming in with their creativity and emotions.
Mm.
And they're going through in their personal life and not really knowing how to maneuver that at work. Because there's the artist, but the artist is in a professional environment where there are boundaries that they haven't necessarily been taught about. So it's there's a lot of just like teaching of how to treat the human while you are doing the work.
Yeah, good point.
How to respond to people not treating you well, how to respond to people being great, how to respond to sexual harassment, to, you know, all those things that we are exposed to in the film environment. Because there's there's a beautiful amount of freedom, I'd say. Mm. However, I think it's very difficult to be a space where there's like freedom for creation and to be who you want to be, to dress how you want to dress, etc. But the lines that are crossed, I think, goes back to the fundamentals of just being a part of and running an organization.
Yeah, that's amazing. Your teams are very lucky to work for you.
Thank you.
I think that's great. And it's so nice to hear that you do a lot of training as well, which is fantastic. How does that work?
So training is a very, very, very important thing to me because I came into this industry not even knowing that it existed the way that it did in South Africa and in Cape Town where I grew up. So I walked in as a trainee. I walked in as somebody who didn't even have any background in makeup whatsoever. So because I was given that chance, it's really important to me to give that chance to other people, especially people like myself who I wanted to be a musician. I wanted to study sound engineering and, you know, do my own thing and have a studio one day and make my own music. And my parents were like, no, that's not going to happen. That's not a real job. You need to do something that, you know, is more solid where you can get work and whatever you decide to do in the future, if you want to do it, then at least you have something to fall back on. And also it was an expense thing. It's quite an expensive thing to learn to study in arts. And my parents were kind of not willing to do that, to go in that direction, but they had their own reservations about the arts industry anyways, because it's not something that they've been exposed to. So I came in completely green, went behind the ear, not knowing anything. And I was given a chance by someone who saw potential in me. So that's something that I've always carried with me from that point. So I'm constantly on every job. I always tell productions I have to have a trainee on the production. Somebody who's either not being supported by their parents and what they want to do, or who wasn't supported by their parents and is doing something they're not happy to do, or whatever the circumstances may have been previously, like, or disadvantaged, or somebody who just couldn't afford to study makeup and so always dreamt of. So we have a very great program here in South Africa that's run by a company called the South African Film Academy. And they have that exact kind of people at their books. And that's kind of where I was put through anyways. I was training and they were like, okay, there's this film academy, so join in. The government helps out, so payments don't really come from production. So they have their own organization, and which is like a nonprofit, and they help people get into the industry and learn while they're getting paid. So that kind of made it easier for me. So I was like, okay, if I'm going to be one of those people coming into the industry, then I want one of those people always in my department so that I can impart my knowledge and give skills, train and teach people.
That's awesome. What a fantastic setup. Because so production doesn't cover the cost of the trainee, the Film Academy does.
I'm actually not sure how it works now, but I believe that I was joining, which was around 2009, that's how it worked.
Yeah.
Because it was that they were like, okay, if you're training, then it's easier. We can get you. And it kind of like makes sure that you can always work because in production, we can't afford to add that to the budget.
Yeah, I was going to say, what happens, like, how does a trainee move up? Like, what's the system that way?
So I kind of created my own system because I saw that in a lot of situations, trainees will come and be on a production, but not every HOD. Sometimes it's actually compulsory. You have to take a trainee. So not every HOD is a great teacher or has the patience to teach, or, like, you know, someone who doesn't know anything. So I realized that a lot of the trainees are just tidying up makeup trunks, you know, cleaning, packing bags, washing people's brushes, etc. And I was like, okay, that doesn't really teach you about makeup. It teaches you about hygiene, which is important. So that's something that I always also focus on in the early stages. But what I do is I get trainees very involved. I will talk to the class and I'll be like, hey, listen, I've got a trainee in my department. I just need you to understand that there will be somebody that might be standing behind me watching. If you're uncomfortable with it, let me know. And if you're not uncomfortable with it, thank you so much. But it's part of the training process. I want them to be able to see how everybody does things and how everybody, like, you know, applies their skills. Everyone has just different techniques. So watching and learning is a big thing. And then once I feel like, okay, cool, they've kind of got a handle of things, then I'll ask them to help me. So I'll be like, okay, pass this, pass that. And they understand the products, what I'm using and why I'm using it and how it works. And then from that point, you just keep learning. And then I send them over to, like, the entrance department, to background department, where I learned a lot because I started off in the background department. Because they, at least, you know, you're working with crowd. So it doesn't have to be specific and you don't really have a lot of time. So you learn how to work quickly. But you also have a great opportunity to be able to figure how things work practically without having to, like, you know, risk the job or it's somebody we might not ever see anyways. So that's what I kind of do. And then once I see the progress, then I start getting them to help much more with actors. And then eventually I'll give you like a day player that's, you know, thinking, well, this is a basic book. It's just, you know, a little bit of hair product. It's a guy. Just do some color correcting or cover up anything that we don't really want to see, any spots, any redness, and I'll show them how that works. So that's starting off with basics and giving responsibility. And after that, we're like, okay, cool. Let's go to set. I think you should go to set and see how people stand by. So you're just going to stand there, watch and support. Your role is to mainly support and make sure that everybody's okay. If somebody's looking through their bag and you can see that and they're under final check, walk up to them and say, what can I get you? Or what do you need? And then they'll get that and then learn how it works on set. So learning set etiquette, learning the process of set, learning who's whom, who's the first AD, how the director works, when they say this means that, etc. And then, you know, you grow and then you start getting, you know, more creative. You can do, okay, now you can do a beauty makeup and now you can do this hairstyle. And yeah, that's basically how it does until I'm like, okay, I think you're ready to be a junior assistant.
Okay, so you kind of, that is all very awesome. So you go from trainee to junior assistant, did you say?
Yes.
Okay. Is that the normal kind of run of things of how it works in South Africa? Like it's just an unspoken thing that you do start as a trainee and work your way up?
Yeah, I think that's kind of how it works. But I know that, you know, different issues work differently. Some issues only allow people to do things if they really have that skill and they know that they have that skill. I am very much about, let's help you figure it out. Let's help you learn it. Like jump in the, I'll throw you in the deep end, see how you do, and then just, you know, guide you through it. If you're not doing well or if you are doing well, I think it's also very important to say you did a great job, not just to say, no, that's not how you do it.
Yeah. And in South Africa, you guys do both makeup and hair, or is every job different?
We do pretty much everything, which I really appreciate because when I was training and when I was an assistant and a junior, et cetera, I learned how to do hair, basic hairstyles. I learned how to do beauty makeup. I learned a little bit of SFX makeup. Then you learn how to do prosthetics. You start off with the applications. Then you kind of like move backwards. So you learn how to apply. You learn how to paint. You learn how to use the final product. And then you learn how to make the pieces from scratch. But most of us, some people do specialize and just do hair or just do prosthetics. Or just do makeup, but most of us, especially in Cape Town, we trained and learned how to do all.
Wow, that's cool. I love it. It's a bit more like New Zealand's like that, where I come from. And then I moved to the States and I needed to choose one or the other. So it took a long time for me to just stop paying attention so much to what makeup we're doing. I was just like, nope, it's not your department. It's not your business. Just,
oh my God, up so many times and be like, no. Don't say anything. That's not your department. Yes, you have your opinion. Maybe you don't like how it looks, but you actually have no say and it's got nothing to do with you. Yeah, it's very hard.
Yeah, it's tricky. So with all the projects that you have done, let's talk about some of your favorites. So what would have to be three of your favorite projects that you've worked on and why?
So my first favorite project would definitely be a film that is called Noma 37, which is an Afrikaans, but translated is just number 37, which was in the number of an apartment block, apartment in a block of apartments. It was like an action thriller. And I had it was one of my first big, you know, productions as a designer. I was quite young. I think I was 5 years in the industry at the time.
That's awesome.
And it was extremely, I loved it. It's one of my favorites because it was extremely challenging. It taught me a lot about who I am and who I can be. Because budget was ridiculously tiny, and there was a lot of blood and gore in that film. I had to have like a prosthetic hand. Hand was chopped off. There was a man albinism in the story, but they cast somebody who didn't have albinism, so I had to figure out how to create that. I didn't know much about making prosthetics because I was still at the point of like, I know how to apply, but I don't know how to create. So I literally went on to YouTube, watched a couple of videos, went to prosthetic material supplier and a prosthetic artist that I know. And I went to just get some advice. How would you do this? What products do I need to use to make this? So it taught me a lot. Like I had to just figure it out. And for me, it was like, you know, such a challenge that I also felt like I can't get anything wrong. I have to prove myself here. So I went and I just did that. So I learned how to make you know, the, like just basic prosthetic pieces from scratch and just through watching YouTube and getting advice from people and practicing. There was that much time. We shot this whole film in about 4 weeks. Yeah, wow. We had 4 weeks to shoot. And I had a trainee and one assistant, which I'd never experienced before, because when I was a trainee and assistant, I worked at big teams, big productions with big budgets.
Mm.
Taught me a lot about how to figure out how to come up with, or basically deliver the same level of quality you would on a big Hollywood production with 1% of what you would get at the production. So I enjoyed that film because it just taught me a lot, and it challenged me, and it made me figure out how to just make a plan and get it done with literally 5 cents.
That's amazing. I love too that you were, I don't know, I think some people have problems with it. I was going to say brave enough, but for some people it's very easy and others it's very difficult, but to actually ask for help and ask for advice and ask,
yeah,
you know, like, I'm not sure how to do this. Can you guide me? Can you help me? So that's awesome. And it's, I mean, luckily it sounds like you got some people who were very happy to give you advice. So that is very cool. That's awesome.
There's a lot happening. We shot like 10 scenes a day or something. The time, like 10, 11, 12, sometimes 15. So the time, there was not much of it at all. The turnaround time for everything. And sometimes, you know, a director will suddenly make a decision. Oh, I'd like this. And you're like, okay, no problem. And you're just like, oh, how am I going to do this? So it's like running to go through it out. It was fun. It was very challenging. I really enjoyed it. It was hard, really hard, but a great learning experience.
Yeah. And what about your other two?
Oh, yes. My second favorite was Noughts and Crosses. I did season 2, which was a BBC series. I loved it so much because the story for me was really cool. Basically, the world is the reverse of colonization. So they call it Africa, I think, but it's basically Africa. And Africa was the most developed and rich continent and country, in the world, and the most influential. So now it's like, you know, flip back. Instead of like Africa trying to catch up to Westernization, it was Westernization trying to catch up with Africa, because that's the beauty, and that's the beauty standard. So that was such a big thing for me, because as like in my experience of working in film and working with people from the US, from Europe and all parts of the world, and their idea of what Africa is, which is very different from what Africa actually is, I always had issues with, like, that's not how we would do it, or that's not how we look. Dust them up, you know, make them dirty, you know, it's poverty, it's this. And I was just like, but it's not poverty. I think we are the richest continent in the world. So it was an opportunity for me to reestablish and recreate the image of an African to the rest of the world. So when I interviewed for it, I basically said, this is how I'm looking at it. Africa is the influence. Africa sets the beauty standards. So had Africa not been colonized, what would we be? What would we look like? How would we live? And I thought it was a really, really huge responsibility, because now I'm basically saying, this is what I believe we used to be. And then apply that in the modern world. I had so much fun on that job, because it was something that I was not just doing for the story, but it was also something I was doing for myself. It was also something I was doing for my kids and for my people, to say, this is who we actually are, guys. Like, the world says it's poverty, people in Africa are starving, this and that. Like, it's all kind of negative, but now let's shine a positive light on it and actually find some sort of identity and pride in this. The director was absolutely amazing. The producers were absolutely amazing. It was with Mammoth Productions, yeah. And I was given complete creative freedom. I had so much fun. I loved it.
Was the director local?
He's from London. His name is Colby.
Okay. So, wow, that's interesting. I would have thought with a subject matter like that, you would want someone that, you know, grew up in one of the African countries or...
Well, he's from London, but he is Ghanaian.
Okay.
Yeah. So he also came in with like, okay, this is our story. Let's tell our story about our people and how we... And just elevate our people and show how beautiful and rich we really are.
Oh, cool. So, yeah, he has a deep connection.
Definitely.
So that's awesome. Wow. Okay. I need to watch this. I haven't seen it. That's awesome. I love that.
So I didn't work on season one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think what they wanted to do, because the lady who did season one was a white lady. Mm. And I think because of that, there was a disconnect of some sort. Because, I mean, it's a completely different world to go in. I can't go into, like, an Asian space and say, I can tell you your story about who you are.
Mm.
So I wanted to do with season two is just to change that up and just put a little bit more depth in it. So, yeah, it was quite challenging as well. Like, I don't always like to do a season two if I haven't done a season one. Because I'm just like, okay, how creative can I be? And in terms of continuity and the original idea and concept of the design, makeup and hair, what exactly do you still want to see? Because I have my very different opinion based on watching season one. So I really want to be able to do it differently. And they were like, no, luckily, because the story shifts quite a bit. So you can just go eight and just have a good time. I was like, fantastic. Happy to do it.
I love it. I look forward to actually watching, like, seeing the differences between the two seasons. I think that'll be fascinating.
Cool.
So how many seasons are there? Just the two?
Just the two. I think from my understanding, they did season one, but they still had quite a bit of budget and they initially had a plan for season two. So it was scaled down quite a bit because they didn't have as much as they did for season one.
Mm.
But yeah, so I don't think that there will be a season three, to be honest.
Okay, so I won't get my hopes up.
It's such a cool story. It's like the world flipped upside down. And I think that it's really important to, as human beings, especially as filmmakers, to, you know, flip the script and show a different perspective.
Oh, absolutely.
Cool story.
Yeah. And what about your third one?
So my third one was recent. I did My Spy, the film. I did the sequel, so it was My Spy 2.
Mm-hmm.
That in from February till May in South Africa, Cape Town, as well as in Italy. It was my first job actually, like, designing abroad. So that was pretty cool. It was really nice to just be out of my norm, out of my comfort zone, and just go somewhere in the world and go learn a different culture. And yeah, it was Italy. and we got there just the beginning of summer. Like, I think we had two or three cloudy, rainy days.
Mm.
And then it was just fine. And it was like, not just as, like, you know, the tourist season was starting. So it wasn't very packed, but it was summer. So fantastic time. It was just amazing.
Were you able to take any of your team with you, or did you need to hire locally?
That was the best part. I was able to take five members of my team.
Oh my goodness, you're spoiled.
Yeah. I was like, what? Like, we're not sure yet. So there is an Italy leg, but we don't know if everyone will be going. So it's not guaranteed for anyone, including yourself. And I was like, okay. And then they were like, okay, you're definitely going, but we can't guarantee that any of your team members can go. And I was like, that's a mess. I can't go without at least one or two key people in my team. And they were like, we'll figure it out. And by the end, they were like, okay, you can take four people. They can be five people, five of you. And I had six people in my team. So unfortunately, I had to make that very difficult and sad decision to leave somebody behind. But I mean, I guess it wasn't such a terrible thing because she was the trainee in the team. So it was her second job. She understood. But yeah, I got to take basically almost my entire team, which was amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome. Doing a job on the East Coast and I can't even take anybody. So
I hear you.
I love it. Now, within all of your jobs, what would have to be a favorite? I know it's so hard to kind of choose because I feel like every character that you create is kind of like a child or a baby to you, like, because it's come from you. But what would have to be a favorite that you created? And it doesn't have to necessarily be like, because of how it looked, it could be the process, it could be what it kind of represented. So what would have to be a favorite character that you've created?
So this was definitely based on the looks that I had to create. And this was on the film, The Woman King.
Mm-hmm.
So I did the makeup design on their job and makeup and prosthetics design.
Amazing.
The king's wives. So the story is based in what's known today as Benin, and back then it was Dahomey. And there's very little information, especially reference pictures, because it was based in the 1800s. So it kind of was tricky because it's so important for me whenever I create a job, especially if we're referring to people that exist, to honor the characters, honor the real people, you know, and be like, just do best to represent the real person that could be watching this and saying, to provide some pride. So it was very tricky because there was very little information. And so I just kind of, some research. I found some nice references, which unfortunately weren't creative enough for the look that they were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, no, we want them to be beautiful. We want beauty makeup. And I was like, but okay, so now we have to go back to the drawing board. What was beauty makeup in that time? And how do we incorporate modern beauty to that time without taking too much away from the history of the people, but without losing the creative freedom either? So that was really, really, really enjoyable. It was tricky because I didn't want to, like, you know, overstep any lines or be offensive in how I went about it. But the guidelines and what was expected of me, kind of, I disagreed with it completely. I was like, that is not how it should be. But I had to find a way to balance it out. Created some incredible things. I was like, okay, how do we go about this? First of all, skin. African humans have incredible skin, from dark to light, different tones. It's absolutely stunning. Let's do, like, you know, a beautiful, flawless skin. I'd say, put 5 layers or whatever, or foundation on. Just find a balance for that. And then what did they have in that village? What did they have in the village that we're talking about? There was a lot of beautiful vegetation. It's beautiful, like, agriculture. So these things, flowers. They used beads to make jewelry. They had flowers. They had beautiful plants, etc. So I kind of combined those two. I used a lot of beads, and I used leaves that were, like, dried out. I used flowers that had, like, you know, dried out. And then just decorated their faces with all of those elements. There was charcoal involved. There was this city was made out of a lot of people from different parts of Africa and surrounding the region. So we had Ghanaians, Nigerians, so, like, very, very West Africa. So what Africa back then had, gold was a big thing in Ghana, still is. They had gold for days. Like, women would literally, like, whenever they made the jewelry, any of the gold dust that would come over there, they would just take it and rub it all over their faces, and it would look like glitter. So I was like, okay. And Dahomey was very big on copper. So they had, like, a lot of copper sculptures. I looked at some pictures and references of, like, some copper sculptures that came from Dahomey, as well as ivory sculptures, which were really big. And that kind of helped me see what they look like, because you see the scarification on the faces. You see a little bit of hair. You see a little bit of, like, the lips be darker, or the eyebrows, they're not there. Instead, the scarification instead. So, like, all of that stuff, I just combined all those different elements to create those looks. That was a lot of fun. And I think they looked absolutely stunning.
Yeah, I will agree with you 100%. And I just love that you did have a lot to draw from, even though you're saying that you know, that it was difficult because there weren't a lot of reference, but at the end of the day, I think you totally worked it out and, you know, thought outside the box and, nailed it. That's awesome.
I have to share this part, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So after the Mummy King was released, I started seeing a lot of people around the world just posting their version of the looks from the wives. And that was, oh my gosh, that just gave me so much pride. And there's a page called NWE on Instagram, and they basically book things about beautiful things in Africa. And there's a video that I took on set that day of the wives, and I posted it, and then somehow they found it, and then they posted it. The next thing, there's, like, almost 1.5 million views and shares. And that for me was just like, okay, if I can make Africans proud and, you know, say this is us, then I've done my job.
Yeah. I mean, people just looking at it and going, being excited by what they're seeing, so much so that they're recreating it. And that's awesome. What an amazing feeling that must have been. That's so cool.
feels very special.
And now we've talked a lot about trainees and juniors and all that type of stuff. So what kind of advice would you give someone that is looking to get into this line of work?
I mean, for me, the most important thing that a person should know trying to get into the film industry in any department is you really have to be passionate about it. You cannot underestimate how difficult it is to be on a film set. It is long hours. You're away from your family and your loved ones for most of that project. People on set become your family. There's a lot of pressure. Time is always an issue. So you have to move fast, but be creative and deliver exactly as your director wants to look, you know, and what the actors like and what they don't like. You have to deal with so many personalities. And the actors in general, and understandably so, quite insecure because, I mean, I think I would feel exactly the same if how I looked and how I present myself and how I act. You know, the world is watching and that's what I'm judged on. So it's really tough.
That's a lot.
If you want to be involved in film, you've got to have passion for it so that you can survive how brutal it is.
Yeah, you got to have some stamina.
Yeah, you got to have some stamina. You got to have some energy. You've got to be motivated every day. Because sometimes you don't want to come to work. Sometimes you just like, oh my gosh, I really don't want to do this again. It's so hard. It's so hard every day. But you have to come through. So how do you cope with that? For me, it's passion, motivation, and just really wanting to see the end look amazing.
Yeah. And there's nothing glamorous about what we do.
Hell no. None of it.
I love that. It must be a rude awakening for a few people who do have that visual of it and then, you know, do their first job and they're like, oh my, what is this?
Yeah, absolutely. Really like study a person and their reaction towards things. I see it because one thing that gets me that I cannot do and that I cannot do for anybody is motivate you to want to be here. It's hard to be here, but I want to be here. So you have to want that before. I don't want to influence you in that. It has to be something that you've decided, I definitely want to do this. See the hardship, see the pain, feel it, etc., and still say, I want to do this. I love what I'm doing.
Yeah, I agree. Anytime someone asks me, you know, do you like what you do? It's just like, it's almost to me an insane question because I'm just like, you have to.
Yeah.
Like you have to love it because if you... don't. Oh, you must be the most miserable person on the planet.
Absolutely.
And as much as I like to complain to my husband, little rants about, this and that. And I have to just stop every now and again and just turn to him and go, I do love my job though. Don't get me wrong. But just when you're in it and you're exhausted and, you know, you've got to come home and just somebody know about the struggle that you're having.
Absolutely. It's very important to have someone to vent to because you're probably going to have to do that every day. You know, want to do it every day.
Yeah.
Go out there and do what you love and suffer through it and have someone to just complain about everything. Definitely. Sometimes you've got to step back and to be like, I love what I do. Yeah. Sometimes I just, you know, the whole, I love my job, I want my job, I love my job. It's a real thing.
Yeah.
You have to. That survivors, yeah.
In saying all of that and understanding what a beast the film industry is, do you feel like you have a healthy work-life balance?
I'd say for a long time, I haven't had a healthy balance. But now that I'm more secure in my mind and in my position, I'm making it work. I think I paid the price. I've put in the work ahead of myself. I got to a point, and I think it's not easy to just have this. Honestly speaking, it really helps when you grow and you have a little bit more power to be able to do it. But now I'm in a position where I can choose the jobs that I want to do. I can decide, is this something that I'm willing to put myself, you know, into? And I've found some sort of a balance. I know how to say no. I know how to say I don't believe in that. A quick example would be blackfacing. I've actually been asked a few times in my career to blackface like a stunt double because we don't have somebody that's dark enough. And I'm just like, there's no way. And there was a time where I was in a department and I was assisting, and HODs would do that because, oh, okay, no problem. But I have a huge problem with that because I feel like we've got skills across the board in every single race and place. So I know how to say, I'm not going to do that. I don't believe in it. I don't do it. And I'll tell the producer, I'll tell the director, that's something I'm willing to do. So you're going to have to figure out how to get that right. So.
And let me ask you, when you say that, are they able to figure it out and get it right?
I don't give them a choice.
No, but at the end of the day, when they bring that stunt double in, have they found somebody that works?
They actually have.
Yeah. So it's possible.
Mm. And in situations where it was really like tricky, like The Woman King, for example, was the first production that I've ever known about to have a majority, in fact, 99% black female cast.
Mm.
So with the stunt industry in South Africa, I'm not sure how it looked around the world, like around the rest of the world, but yeah, we don't have many black women that are doing stunts. So I know that it was a very tricky thing. They trained a lot of girls, like they picked like dancers and people that at least are physical, like personal trainers, dancers, like gym fanatics and those kind of people. They taught them because at least they have some sort of background in body movement. But some of the doubles were much lighter than the actors. And for me, it was a big thing to have to embrace dark skin. Because I mean, we're talking about Africa in the 1800s.
Mm.
There is no, the lighter you are, the more beautiful you are at that point, you know, which is something that's now a thing, which I don't believe in. So there was a case where the stunt double was much lighter. And my thing with that was that I'm going to speak to every single actor, make them aware of what is happening, ask them how they feel about their stunt double being slightly darkened to where they look. And most of the actors said no. In fact, 99% of the actors said, I'm uncomfortable with that. And I said, okay, cool. You're not comfortable with it. I'm not comfortable with it. Then we're not going to do it. But there was one case where we had to do it. And we did, with the permission of the actress, with conversations involved. She was a black woman. So that kind of made it easier for me because I'm like, okay, she's not like she's a white woman or a different race woman. It's just that she's slightly lighter skin. So that I kind of said, okay, cool. I can accept that.
It's great to just go through that process and vocalize and make sure everybody,
Yeah, it's very important. But in most other cases, when I'd said, no, I'm not willing to do that, there was a series where it was bikers and they didn't have, where we were shooting, many black bikers that could do the stunts and were doing it professionally. So I was like, okay, well, if it's a biker and these are hitmen, they don't have to be visible. So we just covered them completely and didn't have to do anything on them. And in another case, I spoke to the producers and said, guys, this can't happen. And they were like, okay, cool. And they found another stunt person to do it.
Thank goodness they've got you on the crew to be the voice of reason.
Sure. Yeah. What can I say?
I mean, yeah, that's just, hopefully at some point you don't even have to have those conversations.
I cannot wait.
I would imagine that your, once again, your HR training would have come in handy to have those conversations.
I think, yeah, definitely. There's definitely an influence from that side of my learning experience. But it's also just something that I believe in and I stand up for. Because as we all know, there's an issue with representation in the film industry of black people in general all over the world.
Mm.
Especially behind the scenes. So that's something I'm very passionate about, coming from that background and having my own personal struggles with being only black person in the team for most of my assisting career. So yeah, it's just something that I stand for and hold my confidence.
Awesome. I want to talk about something that I guess sometimes can be tricky for people to admit to, but we all make mistakes and we all learn from them, hopefully. What is something that you've done so far in your career that was a big mess up, but you came out the other side of? Can you think of anything?
Yes, I can. Recently. So this is really a tough one, but I give a lot of chances because I believe in people, and coming from my background of not knowing what I was doing when I started and having to figure it out and learn along the way, I believe in human beings and I believe in giving a chance. But I found myself in many situations where this has come to shoot me in the foot, because we're dealing with like less skilled people that haven't had the opportunities to learn. but I'm trying to, you know, push them and, you know, get them to the level they need to be, or at least help them, you know, rise a level at least. And it's all in good faith, but I've learned that there are situations that are lighter where that can be done, and there are situations where it can be detrimental to the art and the delivery. So I've also learned to just allow people to make mistakes and learn from their own mistakes, instead of trying to carry more of a load than I should, because that gets very heavy and I end up having to do so much more than I should be doing. Not having the amount of support that I need as a designer. But I've really burnt out from that. But that's something that I've decided not to do anymore. I'm now just hiring from a stronger pool of skilled people, and rather keep the teaching to juniors. Even because some people have had like years of experience, but very minimal exposure to how things are done. And people not training properly, exposing people fairly to the skills and, you know, techniques. So it's a very tricky one, but I've gone through a lot of suffering because of giving chances to people. So I'm just basically now in a phase where I'm trying to figure out how to balance it out and do it in a way that I still benefit from the people that I'm hiring, so that I can get the support that I need and the skills that I need, but also be able to teach.
That's awesome. Just working out that balance. It's good.
Yeah, it's good. It's damn hard.
Yeah. And what is one film you remember watching and just being blown away by the hair and makeup?
There's quite a few. This is a very tricky one. I'm sure most makeup ones, like, what do you mean? Where do I start? But one that I remember was, I was just like, oh my gosh, was Alice in Wonderland with Johnny Depp.
Oh yeah. Wow. Yeah. That pretty is.
It's
fantastical.
Oh my gosh. Also Johnny Depp, like, I know. But fantasy isn't something that I've had a lot of experience in. I haven't worked in a lot of fantasy projects, not because I've chosen not to, but it just haven't come my way. Just being able to, and I think one of the things that I love about creating and need in my career is to not have to just portray an existing world and existing people, but to create a whole different world and completely different people. Fantasy is just amazing. So when I saw that, I was just like, whew. That's the kind of thing that I want to do. I was blown away by it.
Inspired. You're just like, when can I get my hands on something like that?
Absolutely. Like, just amazing.
I love it. And this is these couple of questions are something I ask all of my guests. So if I had you in your makeup truck and you had your whole station set up, what would freak you out? Like, if I came in and I took something away from you, what would you never want to be without?
IPA. I'm joking.
Wow. I mean,
IPA is very important, but yeah. Maybe prostate cream. This is a really tough one. I'd say good skincare is really important. Like, for me, it's really important to take care of an actor's skin. That's your canvas. You want it to be as flawless as possible so you can move. I mean, it's nice to have a challenge, but also it's nice to not have a challenge when it comes to skin. So good skincare and incense.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It can be rough out here. So I like to
that trailer smelling good.
Some balance and just some focus and just, like, you know, wrapping, like, just putting a curtain around myself to just block out any negativity, politics, and all that kind of thing. Like, so I loved incense and the drug. I don't know if that answers your question.
Totally does. But I want to go back to the skincare. Are there any products that you tend to find yourself using on a lot of different casts?
The one product I use on every single job, on every single person, unless they have, like, you know, skin issues and they have a specific thing they like, I really love Oshka products. I feel like they work with everybody. I've never had any complaints. And every time I use it on most actors, they'll be like, what is that? It smells amazing. It feels good. It just makes the skin nice and soft and moisturized. And, you know, it just creates a beautiful canvas. I love Dr. Oshka.
That's awesome.
And sometimes I feel like Dr. Oshka needs to pay me because I've gotten so many ads.
I love that. I'm a fan of the products too. So
everybody can enjoy and that no one but. And for me, also Bioderma makeup remover. essential for me because firstly, I used biodermal products on an actress that had really bad acne scars. And the 5-week shoot, I said, I'm going to put you on this. Let me know how it goes, how you feel about it. I can give, and I like to give little like decant products for actors to take home just to maintain. Her skin really loved it and responded so well to it. And I couldn't. So since that time, I was like, this is my product. But in general, if I use any product on someone, one person reacts or finds it uncomfortable, I discontinue using it. Bioderma and Dr. Hauschka are the two products no one has ever complained about. So very important.
I love that. And one person you'd like to hear on the podcast.
There is a very special man in South Africa who has traveled the world doing his work, who's been requested by top prosthetic artists in the world for different productions and exhibitions. And, you know, like his name is Clinton Smith and he's a prosthetics guru. He's like the go-to person. I mean, there are other people in South Africa that do the same as he does, but personally, I believe he's the best at what he does and he's had the most exposure doing it. And he's got a lot to share. He's a fantastic teacher. He's so passionate about what he does and has been one of my biggest inspirations in the industry, actually. Just, I'm obsessed with people who love what they do. I'm obsessed with people that are passionate about what they do, no matter what it is. Definitely one of those people.
Love it. That's awesome. It's going to take me a lifetime to get through all these people that people suggest.
Yeah.
But, you know, absolutely. I'm trying. Before we wrap, are you up for a quick fire round of questions in 30 seconds?
Let's go.
I love it. Okay. You ready?
Ready.
Would you rather work in the snow or sand?
Sand. Only because I've never really worked in snow.
Do you like to go job to job or have a break in between?
Break in between.
Do you love doing your own makeup?
With all of my heart.
Do you believe in ghosts?
I do.
Have you seen one?
I can't say I've seen one, but I know that someone saw one on one of our sets in a haunted house.
That's exciting. And where in the world would you love to work?
Asia.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I am so stoked that we connected and were able to have this amazing conversation. You've inspired me. And I'm just so glad that I got to meet you.
Oh, thank you so much. This was a fantastic, fantastic conversation and interview. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy you inspired. Love that. Thank you.
Awesome.
Okay, Last Looks crew, thanks for listening. And remember, if you love it, share it. A quick scroll down and you'll find our show notes. Or maybe you'd like to give your support and leave a 5-star review. Go on. Search the Last Looks podcast on Instagram, Facebook, or TikTok, whichever one tickles your fancy. And a massive shout out to the husband, Brett Stanley. Without his patience and tech support, this whole podcast situation simply does not happen. And cheers to Liliana Rose for her fabulous voice acting talents. Okay, Last Looks crew, that's a wrap for me. I don't need to be told twice to get out of here. So bye. I'll catch you on the flip side.
That's a wrap, people.